Welcome to the Power of Attorney Project, which is part of our Conversations That Matter podcast. My name is Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. This podcast is intended to provide general information only and is not intended to be a substitute for seeking personalized legal, financial, or other advice. This podcast raises issues that our audience can further explore on their own in their own local communities with their own local experts. This project will help to be a call to action for families to solve their issues, find solutions to their problems, and have greater peace of mind.
And today's podcast is called Granting Someone Authority Over My Finances, the Current Law in Alberta on Powers of Attorney. And our guest expert is lawyer Arlene Blake, and she is with the firm McAfee Harding. Welcome, Arlene, and thank you for joining our project.
Good morning. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Could you share a bit about your practice, please?
We're located in the city of Calgary. My particular practice is centered on wills and estates, elder law, probate with regards to estates, and as well as I have a bit of an eclectic practice, and I work in the area of administrative law, so boards and tribunals and those types of decisions that are made by them. I do some adjudication on some boards as well. So, and we have, our firm is a general firm. We have a general practice of business law, real estate, wills and estates. We have one practitioner who works in the area of family. Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds wonderful and a very all-in-thing practice that you have. Well, today we're going to talk about power of attorney in Alberta, and I do have a few questions for you. So my first one is, what should I do to ensure my finances are taken care of in the event that I lose the ability to manage them on my own?
I often tell people that there's different ways that someone might become unable to manage their own finances. So someone might suffer from a temporary illness, you fall off of your bike and hit your head, and the recovery requires someone else to care for your finances. Someone might have a more serious long-term illness, or simply become immobile and be unable to go out and do the daily tasks that they would normally do in taking care of their finances. So the level of assistance that you need will depend on the issue making it necessary for you to seek the assistance. But it's fair to say that it's likely that all of us at some time will require assistance as we age. And so it's better to plan for an event. And if it never comes to pass, then nothing's required. But if you do require assistance in managing your own financial affairs, planning can go a long way to easing the burden of your family or caregivers. And what needs to be remembered is that even the person with a life that appears very simple and uncomplicated may need to have someone manage their finances, paying the utilities or the rent. So, for instance, a lot of people think that, you know, homeless people don't need these kinds of documents, but in truth, they do, because there's still events and things in their lives that need to be dealt with that someone needs to have authority over. Now, officially or legally naming someone to stand in your place to manage your finances is the most simplistic way to ensure that your affairs are appropriately managed when you're unable to do so. To do this, you have to complete a document that names the person that you choose to act on your behalf.
Okay, well, let's take that one step farther. What is the name of the document created for this purpose?
Well, here in Alberta, the Powers of Attorneys Act, the Power of Attorneys Act, allows someone to name another person to manage their financial affairs, so in a document called a Power of Attorney. And there's different types of attorney documents, Power of Attorney documents. You can appoint someone to act immediately on your behalf. under the Act, you're known as the person who's giving over the power is known as the donor, because you're donating the power to someone else. There's also a power of attorney that would come into effect immediately and then endure beyond any incapacity that you might have. So that particular document, you can keep aside and not give over that power, but it would live, I guess, beyond your incapacity. So if your family, if that document is there and there's some emergency, you had a stroke, then they would have the opportunity to invoke that document. And then the last document is called, it's a springing power of attorney, whereby it only comes into effect when you lose capacity. And then that requires someone to actually say that you now lack capacity, so that you can name someone who you might determine, to make the determination that you've lost capacity, or it could be two medical practitioners to declare that you've lost capacity.
Okay, and then the next question I have for you is, how do I decide who to give the power to, and what is that person called in the document? And a follow-up question is, what if something happens to the person that I appoint?
So the person named to manage the finances of another is called an attorney. But the job that they perform on your behalf doesn't require them to be a lawyer, an accountant, or any particular profession. It should, however, be someone that you trust over the age of 18, who you believe has the ability to manage your finances, and who you believe will act in your interest for as long as you might need that. It's always best to have the person you're choosing agree to act as your attorney prior to naming them in the power of attorney document. There's no requirement here for them to give written consent to act, but you will ensure that someone will willingly move forward and act on your behalf if they've agreed beforehand. So, and you can also name more than one person to act on your behalf. You can appoint an alternate, and I would encourage you to have an alternate. Often husbands and wives will name each other as their attorneys, but alternatively you would maybe name an adult child that you thought could manage your affairs as well. That's quite common. You can choose that two people act jointly, so you might have two children and you want them to act jointly, but you want to keep in mind that if that is the case, if they're going to act together, that they should live in the same community, because it's very difficult then if every document needs to be signed by two people, that you'd have to go too far afield to find that other person. And if you don't name an alternate or a substitute if something happens to your attorney, because certainly the attorney's job would end should they die or be unable to carry out your affairs, the court doesn't have the power to name an alternate or a substitute, so that's something to keep in mind.
Well, that's a very important point for families to know. My next question is, can I give authority to someone when I still have the mental capacity to make my own decisions, but no longer have the same mobility?
Yes, as I mentioned before, you can appoint someone to act on your behalf at any time. So, and as long as you have the capacity to appoint someone. So, and an attorney must always act in the best interest of the person who's appointed them. The attorney should always take into account the wishes of that person, the donor, if you will. The prospect of having an attorney for someone with capacity does not mean that they are unable to make choices concerning their finances, just as someone else might be able to carry out the actions on their behalf, so attend at the bank or make the phone call, even use the internet for them if that was necessary.
All right, and then a follow-up question for you. What duty does that person have towards me and my finances?
Well, if in general, if you are appointed as an attorney, your responsibilities would be to act in the best interest of the donor. Under Alberta legislation, this also includes a duty to protect the donor's best interests, right? To consult with the donor, with those who take care of the donor and the donor's family and friends. To use the donor's assets first for the donor's support and care, and then if assets are available for the support of the donor's dependents. So you may have the responsibility not only towards the person who's given you the power, but maybe their spouse, or in some cases, if they had small children. And in certain circumstances, an attorney can make gifts or loans to relatives and gifts to charities based on the donor's previous practice and intentions. But that has to be spelled out in the power of attorney. So that's why they need to be tailored to the person. So if you always gave money to a particular charity, that needs to be spelled out. And in so much, that's also true for restrictions. So if you have a home that you wouldn't want your attorney to sell if it were needed for your care, you would have to spell that out. So if you were going to leave your home to someone in your will, and so you don't want it sold under a power of attorney, you need to make that known in the document itself. Your attorney should understand what's in your will, and they should also understand what you as a donor have in terms of assets and liabilities. You will be required to keep accounts and give an accounting when called upon to do so. And this could include things like assets at the date of the attorney's first transaction, assets acquired and disposed of. So if you did sell that house, you need to keep all that information. Receipts and disbursements and the date of and particulars of each transaction. Investments bought and sold, and the date of the particulars of each of those transactions. So you do have it. If there are investments, if someone had a GIC and it was a short-term GIC, you would have to roll it over or reinvest it in something. All of that kind of information needs to be made available in your accounting. You have to determine liabilities incurred and paid and the date of those transactions and the particulars of those. So if you didn't keep the house and you needed to re-roof it, you have to account for that. And payments taken by you and how they're calculated. And when we talk about that, the attorney in doing their job can expect to at least receive their out-of-pocket expenses. And I appreciate that most family members do take care of their loved ones without any compensation, but there is an allowance for compensation as well. And you want to ensure that you keep a copy of the power of attorney in any court orders that relate to your authority. You may want to, if you were in a position to sell the property, you may have to register that power of attorney at the land titles office. That would have to be an original power of attorney, so you'd want to try to have at least one certified copy of your document, so that the other officials or institutions would be able to verify the authenticity of your document. And you have to keep the records until you cease acting for the donor, cease acting as an attorney, and until you receive a release from someone authorized to give it, or until the person acquires the authority to manage the property, until another person takes over. And if the donor dies, then the will takes over, because the will speaks from death. The power of attorney is only as long as the donor lives. And if required, you might have to apply to the court for advice and direction regarding any of those matters. So it depends on, it depends on family dynamics and the complications in a person's life. But you may be required to ask the court, I'm not sure what I should be doing here. And that's okay. It's allowed under the legislation that you go forward and ask those questions if necessary.
And this is complicated business for families. And your comments really speak to when we select that person, we really need to give that serious thought, because you really want somebody who will respect your values and your wishes and your beliefs. And when you take on this role, this is a big job. You know, people at first are honored to do this job, and they are usually throughout, but from my own personal experience, this role can last for years, 5, yes. 10, 15 years, depending on the declining health of the donor. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take this job on with a good heart to do the best for that person, but also be very mindful of all the points that you mentioned here, including how you account for things and how detailed that has to be. I think a lot of family caregivers are shocked when they learn from a lawyer, usually, that the documents that they use to spend things on and the comings and goings within accounts really has to be extraordinarily detailed. And I think that's one area where I'm glad you mentioned it, because families think that they can be casual about that.
Yeah.
And they can't. They can't.
No. It may be as simple as, you know, and you're right, it can go on for quite a number of years. So it's not unrealistic to maybe find a bookkeeper, a small business bookkeeper, who could just manage those books for you, because it can be overwhelming in itself just taking care of the person, being that caregiver. So taking on the role as bookkeeper as well can be quite daunting for people.
You know, families don't have to think that once they are appointed, they have to do all the jobs, because many of us are just caregivers and we're not trained at accounting and those kinds of things. And it's very important that we have the confidence to delegate many of these tasks, and the accounting one is a great example. And I also truly think that if you are going to take on this role or have, I would suggest to people to go talk to a lawyer when you take on this role and say, you know what, please explain it to me. Tell me what my duties are. Tell me what's expected of me. And just show me the roadmap to keep this on track. And I think people would gain great insight if they said to the lawyer, spend 30 minutes, 60 minutes with me or whatever. They would learn a lot about what is expected legally from them. And so part of what we're doing with this project is to say, Canadians, you need to take this topic so seriously, and please go find a lawyer where you live and say, you know what, I need you to explain this to me. And often during the journey of taking on this role, things change. And I know in my case, as my dad's health was declining, I went back to his lawyer who drafted the documents, and I said, here's where we're at. Here's what I'm thinking. Does this make sense? Does this match what my dad's wishes were? And so having a lawyer as part of your team, I think, is critical for, one, your sanity, and two, to make sure you're on the right track, because people can second guess themselves and think that they're doing the right thing, but a fast call with a lawyer or a meeting would clearly say yes, you're right, or no, don't go down that path.
Right. And that's the first step, certainly, before going to the court for advice and direction, is to go back to the lawyer or to go to your own lawyer and say, this is what's happening. I'm not understanding, or am I doing the right thing? And just check in. That's a wonderful description of how the process should work, because every once in a while things do get overwhelming or might tend to get out of hand. But you can just check, if you can just check in with somebody that knows how these things work, you might get a lot of peace of mind out of that, for sure.
Absolutely. So my next question for you then is, what if I don't want the person I appoint to have unrestricted powers over my finances?
again, if you must provide that restriction in the power of attorney document. So as I said before, if you are leaving your house to a loved one in a will, or perhaps it is that your spouse remains living in the house, and you don't want that to be sold for your care, you can make that statement in your power of attorney. And so any restriction that you're concerned about, you should make that known in the document itself.
And my final question for you is, can I revoke the document? And if so, how?
Absolutely. Certainly in Alberta, as long as you have the capacity to do so, you can revoke your power of attorney. If you complete a new power of attorney, each time you do that, you're revoking the last one that you made. And you can also do it by a standalone document, just revoking your power of attorney. And keep in mind that the power of attorney is not, it's not valid beyond your death, so it can't, you're, as soon as, if you were to pass, your power of attorney document has no effect any further, and then the will governs the affairs of that person. So, but I did want to say a few things about, you know, what we were talking about earlier. So is there anything that the donor could do to make the life of the attorney easier going forward? So you might want to keep, you would want to ask the donor to keep an up-to-date and detailed record of the things that they own. So let's assume that you are the donor, so you would want to keep an up-to-date detailed record of all that you own and what you owe, and let someone know where that updated list could be found. You might actually keep that with your power of attorney document. And if you have property outside of Alberta, ensure that the power of attorney will be accepted in that particular jurisdiction. So here in Alberta, we have a lot of people with property in BC, so you want to be sure that your power of attorney document will conform to or be accepted in British Columbia if you need to use it there. Or if not, you might want to make a power of attorney document in that jurisdiction. So, and I think it's important, I've always maintained and believed that family meetings are important, and I appreciate that it's difficult conversations around these topics, but when you do that, then your family members and caregivers, loved ones, they know what your intentions are, what you're going to speak about your values and what your expectations of them are. And also, if you do decide that you are going to make another power of attorney for whatever reason, because certainly circumstances change in your life and you might have an opportunity or you might have a need to make a new power of attorney, you should let people know. You know, if people find three or four different copies or original documents in your home, which one will is the valid one? It generally is the last in time, of course. But keeping people informed about those kinds of things is a very important piece of giving that job over to someone.
Well, thank you for that final comment. That was very interesting. I'm glad that you added that in for us. And before we leave, I'd like to thank you again for joining our project, for sharing your experience and your wisdom with our Canadian audience. And could you please share your contact information with us?
Sure. We are, again, we're located in Calgary. We're McPhail Harding. My phone number is 403-230-4617. And my email is a.law, L-A-W, at shaw.ca. And feel free to give us a call.
Well, thank you so much for that. And now I'd like to have a few closing comments with one of our board directors, Chris Cava.
Mary, who are our initial project supporters?
We wish to acknowledge that this project is funded in part by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program. Our other initial supporters include Care Connect, the Care Guide, the Healing Cycle Foundation, and Scotia Trust. Caregiving Matters is an internet-based registered Canadian charity dedicated to educating and supporting family caregivers. 90% of our work is done online and by leveraging technologies. 10% is done by producing local educational events. We leverage technologies in everything that we do, ensuring greater reach and sustainability. I trust that we have given you some of the highlights of our exciting new initiative. If you are interested in speaking with me about the project, please let me know. We look forward to your questions and your ideas.
Mary, if listeners have questions, what's the best way for them to contact us?
Well, they can contact me, Mary Bart, Chair of Caregiving Matters. My email is mary@caregivingmatters.ca. Our telephone number is 905-939-2931, and our website is www.caregivingmatters.ca.